going to take one more person in the neither for nor against category, and then we go back to Provana. Mr. O'Neill, former member of the legislature, but not of the Utilities and Energy Committee.
No treats.
See, and you don't get any of the blame for the mistakes we've heard about.
Although
we're looking for someone to come.
Whenever you stop in the supermarket and ask whether you voted or how you voted on something, plead the fifth. Senator Hobbins and Representative Hink and members of the committee, Chris O'Neill, I'm from Saco. I'm here representing Friends of Maine's Mountains, neither for nor against LD 1810. First, kudos and thanks to the good folks, some of whom are here on the committee, who served on the task force and did that work. The vision that the report presents is bold and laudable. You often hear from me, I spend considerable time criticizing onshore wind power and its weaknesses, its merits, and its potential viability. But we remain open to the possibility that the ocean has potential, as highlighted in the report. However, our neither for nor against stance is done so because we ask you to consider the report and the bill, after you've amended it, to be more guidance towards a contingency plan than a destination painting yourself in the corner, as I've said to you in the past, and as Mr. Lee pointed out with several points earlier. We've panned wind power as doing nothing to get us off foreign oil up to this point. And we've talked about how most of the state's reliance upon petroleum is in the transportation and heating environments. This vision, as it's presented to you, changes that. It actually does something, as I'm fond of saying, at getting you off of oil. That said, it's highly experimental. We recognize that a massive deployment of offshore wind power that might even present the possibilities of storage, if it's developed to be affordable, reliable, dispatchable, and sustainable, can be a positive development in Maine's energy picture and maybe in the grids in ISO New England. We have panned the concept of a plugged-in society, but we look north to Quebec, where two-thirds of the homes are heated by electricity, and we all know about from whence they get that electricity. That said, when compared to existing, stable, reliable electricity sources, we still consider wind power to be an experiment, and even more so offshore, and largely incompetent in the marketplace today. But this country did put a man on the moon in less than a decade after it got its charge. So we think that maybe Maine can win here, too. But we ask you to shift your thinking to offshore wind power as a contingency plan more than an outright strategy. As you know, Maine has no need for new electric generating sources. Average load is about 1,000 megawatts, capacity about 4,200. We have lots of generating sources now that really aren't even operating. That's under the current way of doing things. About the same proportion, not quite as radical, exists in the ISO grid, where capacity is about 32,000 megawatts and load is generally about half that. Maine's renewable portfolio picture, as you know, is as good as any in the country already. But this proposes this new way of living, notably in the way we drive and we heat, so we support at least the vision that is stated here. A few of the specifics that we wanted to point out that we'd like to work with you on in work session. We express caution about the state risk that's proposed in Section A9 in the provision that allows for FAME to get into moral obligation credit enhancement arrangements. We like the inclusion of hydrokinetic and tidal technologies to mix in with wind in a spirit of diversity. In Section A2, we do find it important that you pay attention to if and how Gentile costs are socialized. In section B4, we like the provision that allows power pricing in lieu of submerged land lease fees. That sets up the possibility that indigenous customers might actually get a preferential rate. And if we can pursue that in a tangible, viable way, that's a good thing. We ask you to test some assumptions, though. The viability of wind power long term. Things like carbon reduction. The load forecasts under various market variables, including conservation. The maintenance of effort when it comes to, namely, taxpayer and ratepayer subsidies. The effect of rate freezes and tax exemptions. As John Kerry's fond of saying, everything is connected. So watch for the ripple effects. We express caution in the provisions of the bill that we think overreach when it comes to forcing the marketplace as opposed to enabling the marketplace. Again, do not force, enable. We ask you to consult with your colleagues on the Judiciary Committee, where in Part E, the bill proposes radical changes to regulatory jurisdiction and changes to the appellate process all the way up to the law court. We offer 3 amendments that you have in your packages. I trust you have them. The first 2 are largely stylistic and technical in nature, and they're done to enhance consistency of language. The 3rd one is a little more substantive. That is section A6, which is a provision you all wrote a couple of years ago in Public Law 2007, Chapter 661. That amendment would change the wind energy goals that Maine has set forth in its statutes. And it actually, they're goals. They're not something that you have to do. But they would be altered to 300 megawatts by 2015, 2,700 megawatts by 2010. That's in offshore, where it used to be 300. They'd ask you, if you can do this, put the pedal to the metal, if you can do this. And then C, 7,700 megawatts offshore by 2030, and that had been 5,000. The effect of that would be essentially to limit onshore wind power to 300 megawatts forever. Yeah. We ask you to consider these as you move forward into work session. We can provide help for you there if you need it. And the last thing I'll leave you with is something that we've talked about in other legislation. We've had several important public policy matters that had to go outside the legislature in recent years. And a lot of them right here in this room, where they ended up coming back to this room. The Chapter 661 that I mentioned a little while ago suffered a lot of criticism in the court of public opinion because it was rushed through in 15 days and there was a suspension of the rules, etc., and nobody had a chance to read it. I don't take a position on that. There was a lot of work that did go into that legislation, but you can avoid the at least the criticism and some of the shortcomings that resulted from that law if you take your time and consider whether you even need the emergency enactor on this. Remember, task force is a task force. It's the best and brightest oftentimes, and it's good folks, but it's not the legislative body. You folks are the policymakers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Neill. Do we have any questions? Seeing none.